person.
Good morning.
Lumeya.
Good morning, leader.
Meeting in here, I just want to talk to you. So, yeah. Lumeya, can we assist Sibulelo with a loan? She's in a serious problem. She has been trying to get the Malaki painting or whatever. Our Bob, it looks like they are sending here to Pila to post. And I was just talking to Tim to see if we cannot assist him.
Good morning, honorable members.
The way that they can assist.
Good morning,
Solani, can you mute, please?
Good morning,
Chairperson.
Chairperson. So then the Pelba are mute.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Chair.
Morning, Chairperson.
Morning, Chairperson.
I can see that Mr. Inanna was preparing to take over when he was asking if everybody is here. But that's very good. That's very caring.
It was a greeting, Chairperson.
That was on a lighter note.
Okay, thanks, Mama.
That was on a lighter note. Good morning, everybody. Welcoming as we are back now from our constituency period. Now we are preparing for our budget vote. And that's why we have invited the department. I just want to put it up front so that members understand, is that we have then divided our meeting. We were supposed to be today and tomorrow, but we were then declined tomorrow because of, you'll understand that Thursday is caucus days for all political parties. So we were then advised to shift it to another date, and we then had to shift it to Friday. So the next presentations that are then going to be tabled will then be on Friday. So I just want from starters, as we start, that members understand why today we'll then do three, and then on Friday we'll do another three, so that we don't club the department for with one day with all its entities. So I just wanted for members to understand why they received three documents for now. And I hope then that explanation is in order. And obviously, I'm of the understanding that your good selves will then accept the explanation. We are back from our constituency. We have been working very hard on the ground with by-elections, being in contact with our people, and I'm of the understanding that in hope that we have been careful and doing everything according to the pandemic, but more and above educating our people the importance of wearing a mask, of keeping a social distance, and of washing hands. And I'm of the understanding that we've also encouraged those that are above 60 to go and register, irrespective if a person is on a medical aid or not. And I hope ourselves also, all of us that are above 60, have them registered and await a message that will tell us where we are to go. We are still living with the virus. That's why it's very important that from time to time we deepen and advance the struggle of ensuring that our communities starting from home are then conducting their activities, even when going out. They stay safe, and hoping that the department is also leading by example in ensuring that all the health and safety regulations are adhered to by first the department, so that they are then able to check all other departments, that those obviously that will then be part of their responsibility. Secondly, honourable members, our committee secretary has Mr. Sakaza has lost his mother, who has then been ill for some time, and on behalf of the committee, I did pass condolences to him and to his family, and may his soul rest in peace. So today we are going to be assisted, and think for the next 2 weeks until, I don't know how long, I've not been informed yet how long will be Mr. Sakaza away from work. We'll then be assisted by Ms. Poshia Ndabeni, who's the committee assistant, who has volunteered, agreed to stand in for Mr. Sakaza. And we want to thank her. Want to thank her very much for that, because at times it's very difficult to persuade or to ask somebody to do work that is not within her job description. But I want to commend Ms. Ndabeni, because that's part of the empowerment. And thank you very much, ma'am, for that. Was that leadership, that commitment, and that loyalty to your work. Keep it up. Having said that, we are going to receive 3 presentations for today. But before we then go into that, we'll then ask Ms. Ndabeni to take us to the attendance register. Who is here, who is not here. Thank you very much. Over to you, Ms. Ndabeni.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members and colleagues. So far from the Portfolio Committee of Employment and Labour, we have the following members: the Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Ndabe, Honorable Nonzele, Honorable Makubele, Honorable Zuma, Honorable Bagrame, Honorable Kado, Honorable Yinana, Honorable Mkondo, as well as Honorable Denner. And from the staff or support staff from the committee, we have myself, Poshia Ndabeni, the researcher, Tebogo Mokoena, as well as Mr. Sibongiseni Ngobo, the content advisor. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ndabeni. Are there any apologies from the committee members?
There are no apologies received, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Thank you very much. Can I, from the department, who is leading the department, Minister, DM, who is around, DG?
Molo, Chairperson. I'm here, and I thought that maybe you would allow the DG to indicate who's here now from our side. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to Chairperson and the honorable members. Chair, I would like to tender an apology on behalf of the honorable minister, who is unable to be with us today. Today will be led by the deputy minister. We have, as you indicated, that we'll have 3 presentations. So we have colleagues from the CCMA, led by the acting national director, Mr. Tolani Nduna. I'm told that the national director is not well, so is on sick leave, and we have the acting national director. He's accompanied by Mr. Maria Skotze, Mr. Nkosi Kona Nkosi, Ms. Anna Mufadiyane, Mr. Mtembe Ninganana, and Ms. Kidiboni Mashahomo. We also have colleagues from UIF. We have a colleague from UIF, Ms. Marsha Bronkhorst, who's the acting commissioner. We have the Inspector General from Inspection Enforcement Services, Ms. Eki Moilo, and we have the acting COO, Ms. Olukolo Sigaba. We have the Corporate Services DDG, Ms. Bahumi Matebesi. We have the CFO, Mr. Beki Maduna, and we have Mr. Sam Murotoba from Public Employment Services. We have the staff from the ministry. We have Zandi Mweli, Karabo, and Sabelo, and staff from my office, Advocate Nhleki, and Ms. Mataboge, and we have Musa Zondi, who's from the communications. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Do we have any guests? May guests please introduce themselves. Before we start our work, we must know who is here. They are to introduce themselves. Can we... Are they here? Ms. Ndebeni, can you tell us who is...
Chairperson, we have someone by the name of Romeo from PMG.
But why is he not recommending? Why is he not telling us? Why should we... And who else?
That's the only person, Chairperson, that wasn't announced as part of the guest.
Mr. PMG, are you connected? All right. I see we've also been joined by Honorable Noble. DM? Is there anything that you want to just briefly say before we start the presentation as the minister?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you so much, Honorable Members, our Director General, Dr. Tobile Lamati, our Acting Commissioner of the UIF, Marsha Bronkhorst, and the representative of the Director of CCMA. I take this opportunity to greet you all. Allow me, Honorable Chairperson, to also pass our condolences to Mr. Sakaza for the sudden departure of his beloved mother. May her soul rest in peace and may the family be comforted. Allow me to thank you, Chairperson, for this opportunity afforded to me to make an input to this portfolio committee on the department, the UIF, and the CCMA annual performance plan and strategic plans. I think, Honorable Chairperson, that we have exhausted all the challenges we encountered due to the pandemic, and I will not talk about it, which is well known to all our honorable members. Safe to say that a portion of our statutory mandate will not be fully achieved by the department and all its entities due to the limited resources emanating from reduced budgets. And this will automatically impact on several statutory obligations, not only the APP, but over the medium term or outer years. When the time is right, Honorable Members, we may have to review some of our APPs and medium-term targets without compromising the 7 government priorities set out by the 6th administration. This situation requires an integrated approach and collaboration across all entities, as well as other with other departments, to maximize government interventions at the backdrop of lack of inadequate resources. And it is for this reason, honorable members, that the minister and I have been involved in various outreach programs, taking services to the people in partnerships with several other departments as part of our interventions. And the district development model is another intervention that eases the burden of resources in delivery of services. Our infrastructure of the 126 labor centers, the provinces led by the CDPOs, the CCMA and Productivity SA offices, the services rendered by our ESA system, the UIF, compensation fund services will place the department in a strategic position in terms of this district development model. And very soon we will be briefed by the Auditor General on the performance and audit outcomes of the department and its entities. So it will be interesting, honorable members, to observe how the Auditor General reflects on the COVID response interventions based on our priorities, which were not necessarily backed up with any additional resources. So this will give more clarity and accountability on the theme that we adopted during the 2019-2020 budget, which is protecting the workers and jobs in the era of COVID-19. And this was our biggest test, protecting the workers and preserving jobs. And to this end, we have disbursed close to 60 billion rands to this end. And these resources are not some additional allocation from the National Treasury, but comes from our own reserves and investments, which took many years to build, which were meant for specific programs. So some programs had to be suspended, resources had to be diverted, and priorities had to change while budgets were reduced. And no additional resources were made available. So I remember, honorable members, that some members were well within their rights not to support the budget vote and criticized us for these interventions. And all of this happened at a time when the country was in a crisis and lives had to be saved and jobs preserved, and we never stopped because we were criticized. I know that we will be presenting to the Select Committee on the 25th of May, 2021. And as I'm speaking now, there is a budget and fiscal oversight workshop taking place for members of Parliament. Honorable Chairperson, we continue to experience some challenges with regards to the unemployment rate in the country. And as a department, we are amongst those that must create conducive employment conditions while facilitating employment creation efforts by coordinating other departments. We may have to provide some data of our interventions to JobSafe and the success or otherwise of our interventions and how we plan to improve same in the current year. So I know, Honorable Chairperson, that there is a planned webinar which the UIF together with GCIS are preparing for, which aims to communicate all of these efforts. We intend to put more emphasis on the reprioritized programs and how we saved lives, how we preserved jobs, and how we improved service delivery in the process, not necessarily limited to all of the above. But I must say, Honorable Chairperson, that the Director General, that Tobile Lamati, and the Acting Commissioner and the representative of the Executive Director of CCMA will deliberate further on the new plans and the sustainability of our programs post-COVID and how they will contribute towards economic reconstruction, rebuilding, and recovery. With those few words, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, I want to thank you for your audience.
Thank you, DM. Thank you very much. Without further ado, I will then call invite the DG to take us through the presentation. Thank you very much. Over to you, Mr. Lamati.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I have a serious network challenge is where I am. I'm going to ask Ms. Sigaba to run with the presentation, Chair. Nonkolo Sigaba.
Good morning, colleagues. I don't know if you can hear me.
Well, I don't know whether you're referring to us, you're asking us also as members, or you're referring to your colleagues for now. But
my apologies, Chairperson. I wasn't sure if I could be heard clearly. Chairperson, let me greet you, Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee of Employment and Labour. Good morning to you, ma'am. I would also like to greet the members of the Portfolio Committee, the Honorable Members of Parliament, the Deputy Minister of the Department of Employment and Labour, who is leading our delegation today. I would like to also greet my Director General as well as my colleagues. Chairperson, the presentation is going to be coming in three parts. It is the presentation of the strategic plan of the department for the 2020-2025 financial years, as well as the APP for the 2021-2022 financial year. Both documents were tabled in Parliament on the 15th of March 2021. The second part of the presentation, Chairperson, will be the supported employment enterprise, which will be presented by the acting CEO of SEE, Mr. Sam Morotoba. He will be presenting the strategy plan as well as the APP for SEE. We will also have the CFO, Mr. Peggy Maduna, presenting the budget allocation for 2021-2022. Chairperson, if I can take you through the table of contents for this presentation, we have the introduction, which will be the constitutional mandate, the policy mandate, as well as the vision, mission, and values of the department. We have the Department of Employment and Labour programs and entities. We have the Department of Employment and Labour focus in the medium-term strategic framework, the priorities and how we're contributing as a department between now and the financial year 2025. We also have the strategic plan for 2020-2025 that is elaborated. Then we will be presenting on the annual performance plan for the financial year, that is this current financial year 2021-2022. Then we will have the SEE strategic plan as well as an annual performance plan that will be presented by the acting CEO for the entity. Then we will have the allocated budget by the CFO. The introduction there, Chair, is highlighted as the constitutional mandate, our policy mandate, as well as the vision and mission of the department. If we can move on to the next slide, sir. The next slide, Honorable Chairperson, is the constitutional mandate of the Department of Employment and Labour. In a nutshell, we are promoting labour standards and fundamental rights in the workplace. That is the major aim of the existence of the department. If we can move on to the next slide. Slide number five, that is the policy mandate of the Department of Employment and Labour. In a nutshell, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, we are contributing to the creation of decent employment in the country. We are promoting labor standards and fundamental rights at work. We are providing adequate social safety nets to protect vulnerable workers. We are promoting sound labor relations. We strive to eliminate inequality and discrimination in the workplace. We enhance occupational health and safety awareness, as well as compliance in the workplace. The department also seeks to give value to social dialogue in the formulation of sound and responsive legislation and policies to attain labor market flexibility, and this is achieved through NEDLAC. if we can move on to the next slide. This is the vision and mission of the department. The vision of the department is to strive for a labor market which is conducive to investment, economic growth, employment creation, and decent work. The mission of the department is to promote employment and regulate the South African labor market for sustainable economic growth. And it is through these elements that we seek to promote a sustainable economic growth too, through a regulated South African labor market, inspection and enforcement, appropriate legislations and regulations, the protection of worker rights, the provision of employment services, the promotion of equity, the provision of social protection, as well as the promotion of social dialogue. Our values, Chair. Our values, Chair, in the main, it is to treat our employers, our employees with care, dignity, and respect, because we value our employees. We are a client-centered organization that forces accountability, integrity, and ethical behavior. We also promote learning and development as a continuous skills development approach in the department. We live the Batupele principles. We live the principles of the department service charter. We inculcate these values through our diligent performance management system. In the next slide, Chair, which is slide number 9, we have the Department of Employment and Labor Programs and entities, as well as the two funds of the department, that is the UIF as well as the compensation fund. From 1 to 4, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, are the four programs of the department, and these are the implementing arms of the Department of Employment and Labor. And in the slides that are to follow, we are going to showcase how each one of these programs is contributing to the mandate of the department. The first one is administration. Administration is composed, if we can move on to slide number 9. Slide number 9. In slide number 9, we have the inspection and enforcement services as the second program of the department, public employment services as program 3, labor market policy and IR, which is program 4. And then we have the two funds of the department. In the following slide, slide number 10, we have the public entities that report to the Minister of Employment and Labor, and that is the CCMA, NEDLAC, Productivity SA, as well as Supported Employment Enterprises, SEE. Slide number 11. In slide number 11, there we showcase the service delivery footprint of the department. We have 9 provincial offices across the country, 126 labor centers that are dispersed across the country. We provide services at 36 satellite offices and 490 visiting points. In the slides that are to follow, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, we have the strategic plan for the Department of Employment and Labor for the financial year 2020 to 2025. We are going to be explaining the outcomes as well as the outcomes indicators and how they are linked of government. In the next slide, which is slide number 13, we have the 7 priorities of government that are in the medium-term strategic framework that are implemented across government. Here we are going to showcase the number of priorities as well as the nature of the priorities that the department contributes to. we have priority number one, which is a capable, ethical and developmental state. We have a stake in that priority as a department. Priority number two, economic transformation and job creation. We do contribute to that through our public employment services, as well as UIF and compensation fund. We have a stake in priority number three, education, skills and health. We do contribute to priority four through UIF and a compensation fund. That is the consolidating of the social wage through reliable basic services, through reliable and basic services. Priority number five, which is spatial development, human settlements and local government. The department does not directly have a stake in this priority, although the department participates in the district development model initiative of government through the provincial offices and labor centers. Priority number six is about social cohesion and safer communities. We do have a stake in this priority. So do we in priority number seven, which is a better Africa and a better world. In the following slides, we actually demonstrate how each of the branches of the department as well as the public entities contribute to the different priorities. For priority number one, which is a capable, ethical, and developmental state, the main implementing branch is the administration branch, which is program one, as well as the public entities of the department. All public entities have a stake in this priority. Priority number two, which is economic transformation and job creation, these are the implementing branches as well as the public entities of the department that contribute to this priority. Priority number three, in the next column, we have IS, PES, UIF, CF, and Productivity South Africa as the main implementing arms in the department. For priority number four, we have IS, UIF, and Compensation Fund as implementing branches of the department. For priority number six, LP and IR is the main contributor towards this priority. Priority number seven, again, LP and IR is the main contributor through its chief directorate called International Relations. In the following slide, we have the impact statement, what drives the department in the implementation of its strategic plan as well as its annual performance plan. And that is a labor market which is conducive to decent employment. Anything and everything that we do seeks to achieve a labor market which is conducive to decent employment. In the following slide, we have priority number one, which is a capable, ethical, and developmental state, as well as the outcomes and indicators that are going to be contributed towards this priority. We have a column that depicts the baseline, the five-year target, as well as the program that is responsible for implementation of this priority. If I can just explain, Chairperson, honorable members, honorable chair, the first column is the column that outlines the outcome, which is a medium-term strategic framework outcome as it appears in the medium-term strategic framework of government. That is a functional, efficient, and integrated government. This is what government wants to achieve over the next 5 years. We have an outcome indicator as a department that is going to contribute towards achieving a functional, efficient, and integrated government. We have several of these outcome indicators, which are defined by five-year targets. The baseline, that column, is the kind of existing output that we have for each one of these indicators. For an example, In the reduction of the vacancy rate in the department, which is what we want to do, to be able to contribute towards a functional, efficient and integrated government, because we know that if we have a huge vacancy rate, it means we have a thin skills base that we can rely upon to implement the mandate of the department. Therefore, for us to be able to be efficient and functional, we need to have as many skilled warm bodies as we can in the positions that matter in the department. For that reason, then, we want to reduce the vacancy rate to 3% or even less than that. At the moment, which is our baseline, we are sitting with a 10% vacancy rate, but we would like to reduce this over the next 5 years to be at 3% or less. Corporate services, the program One Administration is the main implementing program, although all the branches have a stake in the reduction of the vacancy rate in the department. But administration is the driver of this outcome indicator. The second one is the acquisition. No, if you can go back, sir. The second one is the acquisition, the maintenance and improvement of ICT services in the department. Without systems availability, it would be difficult for the department to be able to provide services to those who need them most. For that reason, we intend to provide a 98% system availability across the department in all the 9 provincial offices of the department and all the 126 labor centers that are responsible for implementing the services of the department. It's a tall order to provide 98% of to ensure 98% systems availability in the department. It's going to be a huge challenge, but it is one that we are ready for as a department. Corporate services administration program will be driving this outcome. We have a priority number 2, which was economic transformation and job creation. Under this priority, the outcome that has been provided to us as a department and all other implementing sister departments is that more decent jobs must be created and sustained, with youth, women and persons with disabilities being prioritized. The outcome indicator is that the number of jobs created per year through the Job Summit Agreement initiatives coordinated through the implementation of the Job Summit Framework Agreements must be 275,000 jobs per year. That is the 5-year target. The 5-year target to implement the number of jobs or to create this number of jobs is that all government departments that are tasked with the implementation of this priority must be able to create 275,000 jobs per year. And this is the Job Summit Agreement. Now, the role of the department here is not exclusively to create 275,000 jobs per year, because the department doesn't have the capacity nor the ability to do that. The department in this regard will monitor and report on the targets that are set by the Presidential Job Summit Agreement, so that we are able to monitor as government overall whether we are able to meet this annual target of 275 jobs per annum. The Labor Policy and Industrial Relations Program will be tasked with the monitoring as well as the reporting on these Presidential Job Summit targets and agreements. Second outcome indicator under this priority is the number of jobs created through the Presidential Comprehensive Youth Employment Intervention. and it is about the number of youth that must be absorbed in employment. The target over the next 5 years is that 1 million youth jobs by 2024 must have been delivered by this administration. The contribution by the Department of Labor towards that 1 million youth jobs is 256,000 plus. We have disaggregated the contribution by the various implementing arms of the department, PES, 190,000, SEE, and designated groups, 1,000, target UIF through the LAP program, the Labor Activation Program, 61,000 plus compensation fund will contribute 4,000. Public Employment Services in the department is the champion for this outcome indicator. The third one is employment policy must have been developed, consulted, piloted, and implemented by 2024. Our target is that this policy must have been implemented by 2024. It is currently under development. The next slide, slide number 18. The third outcome there, investing for accelerated inclusive growth. The outcome indicator is to enforce compliance with the Employment Equity Act through EEA inspections. This will include employment equity procedural inspections, DG reviews, and reassessments, and this will be conducted in workplaces on an annual basis. This is the current baseline. This is where we are sitting at the moment, 3,610. Over the next 5 years, this is what we plan to do. 18,420,000 workplaces will have been inspected, and we expect that they will have been transformed. This is inclusive of 1,812 DG reviews over the next 5 years. IES is the main implementing program for this outcome. Outcome number four, this is what government wants to achieve, an increased economic participation, ownership, access to resources, opportunities, and wage equality for women, youth, and persons with disabilities. The department is going to contribute towards this MTSF outcome by enforcing compliance with the National Minimum Wage Act and the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. This also will be done through inspections. Our current baseline is at 172 plus the national minimum wage. You will recall, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, was only implemented on the 1st of January 2019, so it's a fairly new act. The inspectors in the next 5 years, we envisage, will have visited close to 1 million workplaces. That is 838,560 workplaces. That is quite an ambitious target for the next 5 years, in order to enforce the National Minimum Wage Act, as well as the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. Under priority number three, which is education, skills, and health, this is what the department intends to do. For outcome number five, which is safe and healthy work environments, the outcome indicator by the department is to enforce compliance with the occupational health and safety legislation. That also will be done through inspections. Our current baseline now is 23,000 plus. Over the next 5 years, the department intends to have visited over 400,000 workplaces. That is 421,620 workplaces must have been visited in order to enforce occupational health and safety legislation. If we move on to the next slide, the outcome number six is comprehensive social security coverage. This is what the MTSF and government wants to achieve that we must have a comprehensive social security coverage. How are we going to contribute towards this as a department? The department will enforce compliance with UIA, that is the UI Act, the UIA, the UICA and COIDA through the number of employer audits that will be conducted per year. At the moment, we are sitting at 19,340,000. Over the next 5 years, we intend to visit 131,580 employers to ensure that or to enforce compliance with UI, with the UIF, as well as the compensation fund. IES will be at the center of driving that program. Slide number 21. That is priority number 6, social cohesion and safer communities. Outcome number 7 is equal opportunities, inclusion and redress. That is what government wants to achieve over the next 5 years, that there must be equal opportunities for all South Africans. There must be inclusion and there must be a program for redress for past inequalities. The outcome indicator for the department is to amend the Employment Equity Act. This is how the department is going to contribute towards this outcome. In the next 5 years, the department intends to have the Employment Equity Act amended, enacted and enforced by 2024. 7.2, as a contribution to equal opportunities, inclusion and redressment level positions. The baseline country, Africans constitute 23.2 and 40.2% at senior and middle management levels. This is according to the report by designated employers in 2018, as well as the 2019 Employment Equity Annual Report. The 5-year target that we have placed upon our shoulders as a department is that the third sector targets and must achieve at least 50%. We must at least achieve 50% of middle and senior managers who are Africans by 2024. That is, 50% of Africans must occupy middle and senior management positions by 2024, up from 23.2 and 40.2 to 50% over the next 5 years. LP and IR will be driving that program. The next slide. The outcome indicator there under the same outcome, equal opportunities, inclusion and redress. The number of persons with disabilities employed must increase annually by at least 1.5% of the total workforce reported by designated employers. At the moment, we are sitting at 1%. Our 5-year target is that we must move from 1% to 2.5% as far as the number of persons with disabilities employed. 7.4, the development of income differential data collection tools for designated employers. This must have been developed by 2022. And it must have been implemented by 2022. We move on to priority number 7, which is a better Africa and a better world. Outcome number 8, we strive for a better South Africa, a better Africa and a better world. How are we going to contribute towards that as a department? The country obligations to SADC and the African Union must be fulfilled. 90% of those obligations by the department must have been fulfilled by 2025. 8.2, we want to commit to the payment of the contributions that we are obligated towards international organizations, organizations that we are members of on a full-time basis as well as part-time basis. South Africa's participation in international organizations must be secured to advance national interests. That is what we will be striving to do over the next 5 years under the contribution towards a better South Africa, a better Africa, and a better world. In the next slides, we are going to be looking at the annual performance plan. The annual performance plan is the derivative of the strategic plan. It is the annual performance plan, as the word says. We implement it on an annual basis between 2021 and 2025 to ensure that the five-year targets that we have in the strategy plan find expression and implementation on an annual basis. And it will be through the annual performance plan that we will be doing that as a department. So in the annual performance plan, we have the outputs, the output indicators, the annual as well as quarterly targets. These are set such that we are able to enforce a stringent monitoring and evaluation as a department to be able to assess whether we are able to meet the targets that we have set for ourselves in the five-year strategic plan, as well as in the annual performance plans on an annual basis. We have in the next slide the programs of the Department of Labor that are going to be implementing these targets. As you can see, we have program 1 to program 4, and we will be discussing the targets for all the four programs of the department on an annual basis, as well as a quarterly basis. We will start with program 1. Program 1 has a purpose to provide strategic leadership, management, and support services to the department. That is corporate services. It provides a corporate support. We have a budget allocation there of that amount, 1 billion plus. And that is where the chunk of the budget for the department will be allocated, partly also because of the compensation of employees, which is allocated under this budget. These are the three output indicators. We want to reduce the vacancy rate, as we have committed in our SP, and our target is 3%. We must maintain our vacancy rate at 3% or less, and that accounts for every quarter of the year. And we will be monitoring whether that 3% is being achieved on a monthly basis, on a quarterly basis, as well as on an annual basis. The second one is the gender responsive recruitment. We want to make sure that 45% of senior management services members or positions are occupied by women. For the first quarter, we have no target. For the second quarter, we want to achieve 44% of SMS posts must be occupied by women. And at the end of the financial year, 45%. 3.1, we want to make sure that we increase the system's availability so that there is no time where we cannot render services because we do not have available systems to do so. So we want to maintain our systems availability at 98% for all the quarters, every day, throughout the financial year. It's a tall order, but it is one that we are up to as a department. 4.2, the percentage resolution of reported incidents of corruption in the department. This is an attempt to reduce fraud and corruption in the department. And any reported case or incident around corruption and fraud, it must be resolved. It must be reported, it must be resolved by disciplinary and criminal interventions. And our target is that 93% of those incidents must be dealt with on a daily basis, quarterly, and on an annual basis. We want to commit to submit our annual financial statements and interim financial statements according to the timeframes that are prescribed to us by National Treasury, because if we don't do this, it is a non-compliance, which eventually will attract an adverse audit query on our part. It is also good governance. So every quarter, these annual financial statements must be submitted on the due date. 6.1 and 7.1 is an attempt by the department to reduce irregular and or unauthorized expenditure. An attempt to reduce fruitless as well as wasteful expenditure. For that reason, we want then to make sure that 100% of cases that are detected are reported. Every detected case of irregular, unauthorized, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, it must be reported so that these cases can be dealt with through consequence management if it needs be, and other means. There are a number of risks that are associated to the implementation of our strategy. And we felt that it would be prudent, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, for us to highlight these key risks, which could jeopardize the implementation of our strategy, as well as mitigations, because the duty also lies upon us to make sure that we come up with ways to minimize the risk that could make it difficult for us to implement what we plan to do. We've got quite a number of these for administration. The one being the inability of the modernization program to meet intended objectives, that is the ICT system that the department wants to employ in order to make our services to be more efficient and to be able to reach to a wider populace out there. This ambition, Chairperson, honorable members, is under risk for a number of reasons. One of those being that we are reliant upon CETA for us to be able to meet this objective. And CETA doesn't have the capacity to assist the department and government wide to be able to meet these objectives. Our mitigation approach to this is that we are going to re-engineer our business processes. We will do a business process mapping exercise, and our stakeholders must be engaged so that we are able to have a business champion the modernization program so that we can meet the intended objectives. The key risk under this outcome and priority one is the structural deficiencies, inadequate organizational structure to service the department. We are the Department of Employment and Labor. From being the Department of Labor, obviously that configuration has got an impact on the structure of the department, the organizational structure, as well as how we are going to be rendering services in future. How we are going to mitigate these structural deficiencies and the inadequate organizational structure will be to facilitate the review of the existing departmental structure and to engage National Treasury to secure additional funding through the Office of the CFO. This is going to be a tough call in the midst of a budget cuts from the National Treasury, but this is what the department will do in any event. The other risk is that we are going to encounter an uncontrollable increase in our vacancy rate, despite our ambition to reduce it to under 3%. To mitigate this, we are going to be conducting on a continuous basis HR audits to check whether the status of our vacancy rate and to fast track the filling in of these vacancies where we have to, the reconciliation of approved structure and personal information so that any unfunded position in the establishment can be removed, the stringent monitoring of the vacancy rate on a monthly basis, quarterly basis, and annual basis. Advocacy session twice a year will be conducted with our provincial offices, because that is where the main problem lies, because that is where the big numbers of the Department of Employment and Labor personnel lie. So the advocacy sessions are targeted at them to make sure that they prioritize the filling in of vacancies according to prescripts of government. The other risk is the increase in fraud and corruption. The department has adopted a zero tolerance to fraud and corruption, and this will be broadcast very loud in the department for every employee of the department to know that there is zero tolerance for fraud and corruption, and there definitely will be consequences for any fraud and corrupt case that has been detected or reported. The implementation of consequence management to this effect will be prioritized. The frequent improvement on system controls, the continuous reporting of all suspicions to risk management unit, which is the champion for the management of fraud and corruption in the department, the continuous conduction of fraud and ethics awareness programs throughout the provinces. Every report transaction will be scrutinized prior to sign off, and reported cases of fraud and corruption are going to be verified on a monthly basis, as well as the verification of statistics and other means and reports that will point to fraud and corruption in the department. We may not be in a position in the next slide. We may not be in a position to spend the entire budget of the department, and we may not also be in a position to align the spending of that budget with the performance of target and structures. It's something that we have experienced in the past, but we are going to mitigate this by making sure that we follow up and report the progress on procurement plans. We engage departmental executives to reconfigure MSS across the branches so that we are able to monitor the spending of the budget in relation to the work that is being done in the department. The non-submission of financial statements as per stipulated timeframes. We don't want to miss the target dates because there are consequences for that. For that reason, we are going to enforce compliance throughout the provincial offices of the department, but these timeframes are important. Failure to detect and report irregular expenditure. To mitigate this, there will be a separation of finance and SCM functions so that they are headed by specialists in these respective fields. This will be done in the provinces. There will be a capacity building program of the newly appointed personnel, induction as well as training, so that we are able to pick up any irregular expenditure any wasteful expenditure, and we are in a position to report it on time. In the next slide, the poor below standard security services in the department, as well as outdated security infrastructure, it poses a danger to the department because it exposes the department. To mitigate this risk, there will be a thorough assessment of the security according to the provinces of the department, and this is intended to upgrade the existing security system and to support the procurement of contract security services and alarm systems in the provinces. The department is exposed to litigation like all government departments, which is proving to be very costly for the department. The department wants to control this by developing and implementing a litigation strategy, advocacy sessions with businesses, the MOUs to be signed with businesses so that we can avoid any action that is going to expose the department to litigation. The next slide are the implications of the budget cuts that have been imposed upon the department by National Treasury and how they are going to affect service delivery in the department and how we plan to mitigate these as a department. The department has got an ambitious ICT plan to improve the current aging infrastructure. This plan is going to be curtailed and it is going to affect services which may not be fully implemented because the department has got an ambitious plan to provide online services through its ICT planning, but then we may not be able to provide all services online as envisaged because now we have to reprioritize what must be implemented first, which means that this may be a longer term program than we have envisaged as a department. So the department, of course, to be able to do the best that it can, it will implement the priority areas that need to be urgently attended to, like the UIF, which is in great demand out there, and other services in the department that are in demand. But prioritization will be how we will deal with the aging infrastructure development as well as automating our services so that we are able to be more efficient as a department. The second budget cut implication for us is that we know, Chairperson, we know, honorable members, that COVID-19 has forced the department to relook the way it renders its services to the people out there, whilst also having to take care of the wellness of our employees. During the times of the second wave, the first wave, the second wave, we were forced to have some of our staff working remotely, so that we could manage the number of staff that would be accommodated in an office at a given moment. So then we had to had a we had to have the rollout of tools of trade that would enable our staff to work remotely. That number is quite huge. And as a department, we have not been able to provide these tools of trade to all employees of the department within a space of a year. So the full rollout that was envisaged in this current financial year, as well as the next financial years, has been curtailed. And for us then to be able to do this work, we will prioritize the key personnel that must be provided with these tools of trade. We will revisit the current specifications of mobile devices without compromising on the quality, whilst also ensuring that the coverage is widened. But there will be some compromises that would have to be made in order to accommodate the budget cuts. The network was supposed to have been upgraded to meet the required standard of the new SEP applications that the department wanted to deploy in order to deal with the aging infrastructure, in order to automate the services that we provide to the people out there. But this is not going to be done as we had planned. So the department will explore the use of mobile network to lessen the burden on the SITA network as well. The department will not be able to capacitate its disaster recovery site to meet the minimum required standards. The current measures are not adequate according to set industry standards. But again, here we will have to reprioritize and explore cloud disaster recovery solutions if they are going to provide cheaper alternatives for the department. The fifth implication for us is that we have a challenge of appropriate skills within the ICT environment, and it was imperative for us to attract the requisite appropriate skills. But then because of the budget cuts, it is not going to be possible. The reskilling of the existing personnel to cover the shortcomings in the skill set is what the department is going to deal with, and it is going to be a long-term adjustment program to the budget cuts, because to skill a considerable workforce is not something that can be done overnight. It needs time. It also needs dedication. It is completely different from going into the market and sourcing out readily available skills. So we are still going to be sitting with the problem of lack of requisite or deficient requisite and appropriate skills for quite some time within our ICT environment. The sixth implication for us is that the inability to capacitate the department and address emerging governance issues such as ethics management, human resources needs, OHS and employee health and wellness matters, which have become critical since the existence of COVID-19. The department will create contract non-permanent positions in the short term to be able to deal with the capacity deficiencies in these new needy areas within the department. The next program is program number two, which is inspection and enforcement services. The program purpose is to realize decent work by regulating non-employment and employment conditions through inspections and enforcement, to achieve compliance with all labor market policies. That is the purpose of the existence of this program. The budget allocation is 633 million plus close to 700 million. And these are the four output indicators for IS for the coming, for this existing financial year. We have the number of employers that will be inspected per year to determine compliance with employment law. That is the annual target, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and it is appropriated for the four quarters. In quarter one, this is what we intend to achieve. And in quarter four, we intend to achieve 296,904. The second output indicator here is that those non-compliant employers that have been inspected must be served with notices in terms of the relevant labor legislation, and that must be done within 40 calendar days of the inspection. we want to reach 90% of those employers throughout the year. The third one is that the percentage of those non-compliant employers that have been received by our statutory services must be referred for prosecution. There must be consequences for non-compliant employers, and that must be done within 30 calendar days. We want to reach 65% of those errant employers. 1.4, we want to hold about 4 seminars and 2 conferences in this financial year, which are advocacy sessions that are intended to increase awareness about the employment law in the country. These are the inspections in the next slide. The inspections, according to the provinces, they have been appropriated for the provinces of the department. The 9 provinces of the department have got a fair share of the inspections that they must conduct on a quarterly basis as well as an annual basis. This is how then we monitor the implementation of the targets that we have in our strategic plan as well as in our annual performance plan, because we do have quarterly reports that must then inform us about the status of the implementation of these targets on a quarterly basis as well as on an annual basis, which is why Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, we will be coming back on a quarterly basis to inform you about how far we are with the implementation of all the targets that we have set for ourselves over the quarters and over the year, and over the 4 years. In slide number 39, we have those targets for the different pieces of legislation. We have the annual target for employment equity legislation, Basic Conditions of Employment Act, OHS, Employee Audits COIT, and in the next column we have the total of those inspections that we will be conducting in these various areas for the various provinces. The key risks and mitigation for IS, non-compliance by employers and users with labor legislation is a headache for the department. But then to mitigate this risk, the department will strengthen sector-specific advocacy by utilizing various platforms at both provincial as well as national levels. The department seeks to improve the conducting of follow-up inspections to strengthen monitoring areas of non-compliance. So there will be a stringent move to implement a follow-up inspections for those errant employers. Effective implementation of existing MOUs, establish and maintain partnerships in key sectors where there are no MOUs, provinces to commission blitz inspections in targeted problematic sectors and high-risk areas, improve on referring all employers who fail to comply with expired notices for prosecution. So the department wants to enforce consequence management for those employers that refuse to comply with the legislation of the department. The implication of budget cuts for the ISAPP, these are the following areas that have been affected. There would be a reduction of visits to workplaces as traveling may have to be curtailed. We use cars, we use petrol, we use more inspectors, and if we don't have any of these, then we will not be able to visit each and every workplace as we would have wanted to. Prioritization, of course, of problematic sectors is gonna have to be a mitigating factor one way or the other here. Inspectors may not be provided with tools of trade, especially in reference to refreshing of laptops and provision of cars. advocacy and outreach campaigns will be affected? The objective of empowering stakeholders in terms of the offerings of our employment laws may not be fully realized. There's likely to be a decrease in the rate of enforcing compliance of employers and entities who are flouting the law. So our numbers may decrease over time because we will not be able to reach each and every employer as we had envisaged in the past. The training and development program of inspectors may also not be fully realized. These are the mitigating strategies. The department will improve stakeholder relations to ease funding needs and collaborate on areas of agreement as regulated by the various MOUs. The department will take advantage of technology so that we are enabled to conduct remote inspections where possible, training advocacy sessions so that we can reduce traveling costs and other related costs. The department will streamline some processes to build in efficiencies, like the conducting only of DG reviews and reassessments in the space of Employment Equity Act. And also instead of conducting procedural inspections, the department will explore models that will improve self-regulation so that we could free up resources that will focus only in areas of concerns, and that is the reprioritization I referred to earlier. We move on to program number three, which is public employment services. The existence of this program is to assist companies and workers to adjust to changing labor market conditions. Their budget allocation is 610 plus million rands. These are the four outputs that are depicted on page 44. The first one is the number of work seekers that will be registered on Employment Services, a system of South Africa on an annual basis. The annual target is 800,000. There it is appropriated on a quarterly basis, and these are the targets that we will be monitoring on a monthly and quarterly basis so that we are able to meet the annual target. The second one is the number of employment opportunities registered on the Employment Services South Africa per year. That is 100,000, and that is the quarterly appropriation of this annual target. The third one is the number of registered work seekers provided with employment counseling per year. Our annual target is 230,000. Over the four quarters, this is what we want to implement. 4.1, number of registered employment opportunities filled with registered work seekers per year. The annual target is 50,000. And this is the output that we'll be monitoring on a quarterly basis. The fifth indicator is to increase the number of partnerships and agreements that are concluded with various stakeholders. The annual target is 20, and this is how we're going to implement that 20 over the four quarters. Public Employment Services will develop policies, and these policies must be approved, one of them being the employment policy. The annual target is that one policy will be targeted for this year, for this financial year, and it should be completed, developed and approved by the end of this financial year. This is the provincial breakdown of the public employment services targets over the four quarters. We have got all the nine provinces of the department that will be implementing the annual targets on a quarterly basis for the four outputs that we have seen in the preceding pages. So this is per province, the number of work seekers registered on Employment Services of South Africa per year. This is what each province is expected to do. The number of employment opportunities registered in the Employment Services of South Africa per year. This is what each province is expected to do on an annual basis as well as on a quarterly basis. the number of registered work seekers, slide number 48. The number of registered work seekers provided with employment counseling per year. These are the targets for the year that must be implemented by the 9 provinces over the 4 quarters. Of course, this is daily work. It is monthly work, quarterly work, annual work. So there is daily monitoring, weekly monitoring, quarterly monitoring, as well as annual monitoring, so that we do not at any stage miss the targets because we are not monitoring the work that we do. We must not meet the target because of circumstances that are beyond our control. Slide number 49, that is the number of registered employment opportunities filled by registered work seekers per year. That is the provincial appropriation of this target. Each province has got its own annual target according to the size of the province, the capacity of the province, as well as the resources that can be deployed by that specific province. This is how these targets are appropriated. It is in consideration to the capacity of the province, as well as the size of the province, the footprint of the province, the number of clients that can be reached or can access our services from that province. These are the key risks that we expect under public employment services when we implement this program. Of course, the major headache for the department is the insufficient placement of registered work seekers in registered opportunities. This has been with us for quite some time. The way in which we are going to deal with this, there will be a collaboration with the Presidency Program Management Office, the UIF, other departments and entities, the private sector and NGOs in providing a range of work seeker services. There will be further developments on ESSA online services. There will be an establishment of youth centers and rollout of 24 PES mobile units to reach out to as many potential clients as possible. The department seeks to conclude strategic partnerships and agreements with employers and institutions to use ESSA for recruitment. The development and implementation of national employment policy, the sub-themes, and amendments to employment services legislation. This will be done by the department. The provision of funding to entities assisting PES in employment promotion, that is SEE, Productivity SA, Compensation Fund, NGOs, as well as the UIF. The budget cuts and the impact on the intention of the department to contribute to employment creation and how these are going to be mitigated. The budget reductions of 25 million in 2021-22, 45 million in 2022-2023, and 77 million in 2023-2024 over the MTS period were effected on this program, Public Employment Services. The budget reduction on the compensation of employees, goods and services, transfers and subsidies have had a negative impact on service delivery. Procurement of goods and services for additional recruitment of staff, as well as tools of trade to assist them to carry out their functions, this was curtailed. Attempts to close gaps on work seekers to access the labor market. Attempts to close gaps on work seekers to access the labor market were restricted, including PES ability to assist workers with job search and placement. Plans were put in place to obtain external funding for the procurement of goods and services. Donor funding were accessed to establish employment services mobile units to enhance work seekers' employability and placement. The implementation of Section 12 of the Employment Services Act by UI and Compensation Fund is in process. This will provide the so much needed resources and capacity to assist Public Employment Services to be able to discharge its mandate. The last program, which is Program 4, the Labor Policy and Industrial Relations, LPNIR, exists to facilitate the establishment of an equitable and sound labor relations environment. Support institutions that promote social dialogue, like NEDLAC, promote South Africa's interest in international labor matters, conduct research, analysis, and evaluation of labor policy, and provide statistical data on the labor market. This is what this program exists for. The budget allocation for LPNIR is quite bigger than the other two programs because there are huge transfers out to some of the public entities of the department, as the CFO is going to explain in the presentation on the budget allocation. Their budget allocation is 1.2 billion. Their first indicator is the amendment of the Employment Equity Act, which must be finalized by the end of this financial year. The annual Employment Equity Report will be published by June 30, 2021. The annual Employment Equity Report and Public Register will be developed by the end of this financial year. The Income Differential Data Collection Tool. There is no target for this year. It was a target for last year. It will be a target also for the following years. 2.4, the Code of Good Practice on Elimination of Harassment and Violence in the World of Work will be published by the end of this financial year. The national minimum wage level will have been reviewed by the end of this financial year, and a report will be published by 31st October 2021. This branch wants to make sure that 100% of collective agreements are assessed and verified, must be complete within 180 working days. And that must be done throughout the financial year. And there is a target for this for every quarter that must be evaluated and measured. 5.1, 100% of labor organizations' applications for registration must be approved or refused within 90 working days of receipt. There is a quarterly target for this, and it is at 100% for all the four quarters. 6.1, there must be two reports on the implementation of bilateral cooperation and multilateral obligations signed off by the minister on an annual basis. In quarter one, there is an implementation report that must be submitted to the minister. And in quarter three, there must be one mid-term implementation report submitted to the minister for information as well as sign off. 7.1, the number of annual labor market trend reports produced to assess the impact of the labor legislation. There are four annual labor market trend reports that are planned for this financial year, two for quarter one and two for quarter four. The number of research reports to assess the impact of our labor legislation in the labor market must be produced. We intend to have two research reports and two data collection instruments in line with the research, monitoring, and evaluation agenda of the department in this current financial year. These are the series of steps that will be undertaken to get us to the annual target of two research reports and two data collection instruments. The risk
identified in the implementation of the business of this program? Is insufficient labor market research conducted in terms of monitoring the impact of the legislation? Partly due to the fact that the department doesn't have the capacity and enough skills to conduct this kind of work. It's highly specialized work, and this could curtail the ambition of the department to have that market research conducted in time for us to be able to assess the impact of legislation on the labor market out there. The risk mitigation by this branch will be to develop a monitoring and evaluation agenda that lists a number of research topics that will be outsourced and conducted over a period of 2 years. So the department will look at outsourcing some of the highly skilled work so that we are able to meet the target. We will limit the number of research that require tender procurement and increase procurement through request for proposals. We will procure an online survey tool to facilitate more research that can be conducted internally by our own departmental staff members so that we can limit on the cost that is spent on research. I would like to thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. My presentation now comes to an end as we start with the Supported Employment Enterprises presentation of their strategic plan and annual performance plan. I will then hand over to the Acting CEO for SEE and the DDG for Public Employment Services, Mr. Sam Morotoba. Thank you for indulging me, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and my colleagues. Over to you, Mr. Morotoba, sir.
Thank you, Ms. Gaba. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, the Honorable Deputy Minister of Employment and Labour, DG, and my colleagues. I'm going to go through the Supported Employment Enterprise Strategic Plan. Its purpose is to facilitate supported employment for people with disabilities and to provide work opportunities for persons with disabilities and to develop and implement programs that promote the employability of persons with disabilities. And we also perform other functions as prescribed by the Minister in the Act, but in line with the functions of supported employment enterprises. Next slide. Ms. Gaba did indicate in the strat plan that the SEE currently, because it is not listed as a separate entity, its strat plan forms part of the Department of Employment and Labour. Now, the SEE contributes to the priority number 2, which is economic transformation and job creation. And in the main, it is there to provide a number of jobs created through the Presidential Comprehensive Youth Employment Interventions will also contribute to that. Currently, SEE employs 1,250 people with disabilities as the baseline, and it is supported by an additional 159 people that are Dell staff seconded to support these entities. Now, the entity had to relook at its contribution. The strat plan talks about 1,000 people. Now the SEE will in the 1,000 contribute about 400, starting with the 25 additional persons with disabilities employed in the SEE factories. Now, Honorable Members, these are permanent employment that we are giving to these people. These are not just part-time. We do at some stages create part-time employment, especially where we deliver desks and other furniture that needs to be assembled in the various schools. In those instances, because of the cost associated with hotels and so on, we would normally recruit local people with disabilities, train them in the assembly of the units that are transported by trucks. And the intention is to make sure that once we have delivered those products, the schools in the local communities will give them jobs to maintain those desks whenever they break, and make sure that the school is equipped with all those units. In the 2021 financial year, those that are going to be given permanent additional employment is 25, and in the 21-22, because of the budget cuts, 25. And we are hoping that with a number of measures that we have put in place, we will improve on the sales of products that we produce, and will increase those numbers to 120 in the 2022-23 financial year, and another 130 in the 23-24 financial year, and another 100 in the 24-25 financial year, which brings the total to 400. You can move to the next slide. Now, in terms of the second indicator, we talk to the percentage sales increase to ensure financial viability and growth. Honorable members will recall that we receive about 150 million as a grant, and because of the budget cuts, this has been reduced as well. And we also generate additional income, and this is the only entity in the department that has managed this well, that it does not rely completely on the allocation from the fiscus. And through the generation of additional income, we are able to increase the employment prospects and also increase the income of people with disabilities employed at SEE. And because of the income that we provide being much higher than what social development prescribes, the people at SEE don't draw any social development, unlike in other institutions where people will earn their income and also draw their grants. So in the 2021 financial year, our target is to increase revenue by 5% and 5% in the 21-22. And we hope to increase in the 22-23 financial year by 25%, 35%, and 40% in the 24-25 year. And obviously, this will depend strongly on the government procurement of goods. And we're hoping that with the passage of the Preferential Procurement Act, FEE will be amongst those that are going to get preferential treatment and receive contracts from various government departments. Next slide. The third indicator talks to increasing the FEE's market share. Now, to do that, we are hoping to complete a number of agreements with parties. Whilst we have targeted government departments, and currently we have big departments such as the Basic Education and Department of Health and their provincial counterparts, we are hoping to expand this to district municipalities so that they can procure services from SEE. Now, in the 2020-21, we targeted three customer agreements, 10 agreements, and in the 24-25, another 5 customer agreements to be concluded. So those were the main 3 indicators. Now, the next slide gives you a breakdown of the number of people that we are going to employ. We normally targeted the third and fourth quarter, because that is where the production would normally peak and government departments will also place orders in a number of areas. On the percentage, we're hoping to increase during quarter one, 1.25 and 2.5 in quarter two, and 5% by quarter four. And on the number of agreements, we split it to have one each per quarter, with the third quarter achieving 4 and the last quarter concluding 5 agreements. Now, on the risk mitigation that we have put, we cited the inability to generate work opportunities. And this is very central, because if FEE does not grow in terms of additional number of people, then we remain stagnant with the current. And to try and mitigate the situation, we have done a number of things. We have developed a marketing strategy that was canvassed, that was that looked at a number of market developments, and we are hoping that with that marketing strategy, we will also capture the market. We will also develop new innovative products, and the reason why we are going this route is because we realize that targeting only government departments, you reach a block, and currently with the new normal, we have noticed that the orders like furniture, except for school desk, has declined substantially, and we had a peak in the areas of hospital linen, and that this is partly because of COVID and assisting quite a number of hospitals. But the intention is to make sure that we develop new products that are targeted at the new and developing areas that we can sell to the general public, because during the participation that we've had at the various shows, a number of people have shown interest in the products that we are producing, and we're hoping that with that approach, we will be able to expand the production process. We have procured new machinery. We have actually made sure that some of the very old machines that that were in operation since the 40s that were struggling to get components, we've actually written them off. And we have made sure that in the procuring of new machinery, we do not completely displace people with disabilities. In fact, those machines are made to make sure that all the hard and difficult aspects are done by the machine, and the finishing is done by as many people with disabilities as possible, so that we can increase our production. And we're hoping that with the new products, we'll be able to achieve that. And in securing customer agreements, we're hoping that that will expand the base and increasing the sales. The 5% is just a bare minimum, and we're hoping that we can accelerate and achieve that. Next slide. I think, honorable members and chairperson, We didn't go into detail in terms of the environmental scan and all that, because the areas that Ms. Sigaba covered is also applicable to the SEE. The SEE forms part of the internal audit, the risk, and all other committees of the department, and all the supply chain aspects also apply to them. The budget cuts obviously will also have a serious impact because SEE has been affected as well. And we are hoping that with the interventions that we're going to put in place, we will be able to address that. And to demonstrate the point on the impact of the budget cut and not securing business from government, the Director General had to approve a vermint from the compensation fund of about 25 million to bail the supported employment enterprises out during the last month of March, because it had problems in affording salaries. And this was partly because a lot of people had to be laid off at home, and those with comorbidities were not involved in the production process because we couldn't risk bringing some of them into factories, and we operated on skeleton staff, and Treasury was able to support the DG's request to grant that SEE bailout. So we're hoping that with the measures that we have put in place and the Treasury support in the process, because they acknowledge the problem, they set prices that SEE charge. They also understand that had they forced government departments to procure from the supported employment enterprises, especially during COVID, they would have assisted in rescuing the situation. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members.
Thank you, Honorable. I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Moratoba, and the DG, and the lady who made a presentation. Members, can we? I would like to make a suggestion that let us ask questions on these presentations, so that we don't exhaust our concentration levels with too many presentations at the same time. I would recommend that we ask questions now on these that have been done, which is mainly the department and its other entities, not entities as such, and other units that are under their direct I hope members are comfortable with that.
It's a good idea, Madam Chair.
Okay, I thought I was alone. It was quite, I see the first hand is Honorable Bagram, if I'm correct. Can this be removed now so that I'm able to see exactly who has whose hand is up? Mr. Moratoba? Thank you, Honorable Kado. Any other hand, Honorable Mkhonto? For now, we've got those three hands. Honorable Bacon?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it, and thank you very much for the opportunity to ask some questions. Obviously, the first question must go to the Deputy Minister, and it was very pleasing to see the Deputy Ministers with us today, so thank you very much for that and the introduction. But Deputy Minister, I think we must admit, and it seems to be common cause in the country, that in fact the Department of Employment and Labour has had a rather pitiful year. It's been quite shameful. We've had a year of growing unemployment. We've had a year of very little service delivery. We've had the destruction of many of the entities such as the CCMA, the UIF, the Compensation Fund. I'm not entirely blaming you, Deputy Minister, or the Ministry about this. I mean, obviously COVID-19's had an influence, and the big thing is the national government's had an enormous influence in that we've had the Department of Employment and Labour have their budget cut to shreds. And I just wanted to know from you, Deputy Minister, are there any plans to go ahead and challenge the Finance Minister and try and get that budget cut back again? I mean, the reality is service delivery is at an all-time low, and somehow you seem to have avoided that in your introduction. I'm not blaming you for the destruction of the department, but it is really pitiful. Then just to go on to the actual DG's report and his introduction as well, the reality is that under Section 9 at slide number 4, you want to ensure equal access to opportunities. Well, there certainly isn't equal access at all, even to your own facilities. I mean, you can't go into the CCMA. You have to go online, which has cut out the real poorest of the poor workers of South Africa. They are struggling. You've heard from the trade unions. You've basically heard from COSATU. There seems to have been a dropping of the ball. The department's dropped the ball completely. Also, at that same slide, you talk about speedy labor justice. I mean, all these budget cuts have killed labor justice completely. It just doesn't make any sense. Also, under your vision and mission at slide number 6, your mission is inspection and enforcement. Well, we've also heard from the reports from your member saying that the inspection and enforcement has been cut to shreds again. I mean, we've hardly got enough inspectors as it is. They have very little tools of trade. When you speak to inspectors, they are really under the weather. They're being destroyed completely. And unfortunately, we've got a situation now where inspection and enforcement almost doesn't exist. It's pretty sad to see, and it's pretty awful to try and explain to employees, and I get complaints all day from employees that somehow when there's a call, a desperate call for an inspector, you just never see one, and that's a problem. I just want to quickly go, and I've got lots of other things, but I know that the chair is going to cut me short, so if you go to slide number 22, if you have a look at the disabilities, and this is an issue that I did want to take up. The number of persons with disabilities you want increased, that's slide 22, sorry, you want increased by at least 1.5%. You might recall, Deputy Minister and DG, under Minister Olifant at the time, we were also at 1% of the total workforce in both public and private sectors. We were promised it would be taken then, this was about 6 years ago, it would be taken to 3%. That promise never came to be. How can you make these promises when, in fact, you've been struggling all along to get the disability sector represented? I do praise the input from Mr. Maritoba, but somehow it's only the government that seems to be trying to employ more and more people in these assisted facilities as opposed to in actually departments. Your departments are failing you really badly, and maybe you can comment on that. And I don't know where you're getting these figures from, because every year we hear if you're going to increase it, it doesn't make any sense at all. If I can just quickly have a look at slide number 28, where you have a promise there of 93% resolution of reported incidences by disciplinary and criminal interventions. It's great to offer all this, but even within the department, we've had all this fraud within the UIF. We were promised that there would be outcomes of disciplinary inquiries and outcomes of criminal cases, and yet there's been no report whatsoever about this. Maybe you can comment on that. Again, on page 29, slide number 29, under administration, you've got a target in that first quarter of 100% reporting of detected occurrences of the problems over here. And the reality is, that's all very well, but I don't think there's any consequences at all. We don't hear about consequence management at all, and that's a real problem. I just have a strong feeling that a lot of this gets swept under the carpet after you've done your report, and then you go on to the next report, and we don't have, from year to year, we don't have report back saying this has actually been done, and these are the people that are been dismissed, these are the people that are going to jail. You don't need to in any way protect those people if they've already been criminally prosecuted and found guilty. And that's a real problem. If I can go to page 40, to slide 43.
Last one, Honourable Baker, for now.
Okay, I'll come back later if I can. Slide 43, the Code of Good Practice on the Elimination of Harassment and Violence in the World, to be published by 31 March 2022. What's the holdup? The President's already trumpeted it and boasted to the country that we've got this code of good practice and that everyone is very happy about it. I'm not sure why we're dragging our feet. What's going on? Why in a year's time is there an annual target? Just do it now and let's get some discussion going and let's let the public know about it. We know in this country we have a real problem with harassment and violence in the world of work. And in fact, we have to follow the international protocols on this. We've got no choice. We've signed in. I'm not sure of the holdup, but thank you for the opportunity, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Member Honourable Kado.
Thank you, Chair. I've got three questions. The first relates to the statement made in the presentation that the department has zero tolerance for fraud and corruption. I want to know what's happened to the seven senior officials at the UIF implicated by the SIU in fraud and corruption to do with the TERS scheme. Their disciplinary hearings, we know, were meant to be conducted at the end of February, but we've heard nothing about the outcome. What's happened? If the department is going to claim a zero tolerance approach, it needs to match word with deed. So what is the outcome in each instance of those seven senior officials who went through disciplinary hearings to do with fraud and corruption? Then secondly, you indicate that the number of employers to be inspected per year to determine compliance with employment laws in one of the slides, you break it down per quarter. And in quarter one, it's 74,226 inspections. And in quarter four, it's 296,904 inspections. Why does this vast discrepancy exist? And then allied to that, you stated in a subsequent slide that you don't have the capacity to conduct these inspections given budget cuts, and you talk about doing remote inspections, but how do you conduct a remote inspection of a workplace? I'd be curious to know how that actually pans out in practice. And then finally, one of your targets is for the department to contribute 256,000 youth jobs by 2024 to the grand total of 1 million youth jobs. So I would like to know what exactly are these jobs? You've given figures for various programs. So for example, the UIF is going to contribute 61,000 of these jobs, the compensation fund 4,000 of these jobs. But what jobs will the youth be doing at the unemployment insurance fund and the compensation fund and indeed all the other entities and programs of the department. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Kado, Honourable Mkhondo, can Honourable Bakram and Honourable Kado lower their hands, please?
Thank you, Chair. We welcome the presentation from the department. Chair, our heartfelt condolences to the Sakasa family. May they be comforted. Thanks, Chair. Chair, my biggest worry in the presentation about the strategic plan and the APP of the department, it looks very rosy. But the big question is, that do all these things presented here have an impact specifically to an ordinary worker out there in the peripheries, rural peripheries of this country? The one target of the department is to fill vacancies, and they envisage to do capacity building, training and induction. Can that, Chair, not be done only to those newly recruited employees? Maybe if the department can also have a smaller nyana budget to do it with even their current employees, because the focus now seemingly is on achieving these targets that have been presented here, and a certain percentage of the employees of this department, they don't understand that they have a responsibility to serve the public or the communities of this country. Chair, my question will be on the ESSA, the online services that they've been talking about. Am I understanding, Chair, that this will ultimately replace what the public has been complaining about, the issue of labor brokers? Does it have a potential to do that? And a request, Chair, that we be given the addresses of the SEE's factories, the physical addresses. If it has been done before, I apologize. Maybe I was not part of this committee by then. I really need to have the physical addresses of these SEE factories. And then in the presentation, it is mentioned that there will be additional employment, 25 additional employment opportunities by 31 March 2021. Is Mr. Mrotowa aware that that date has passed and he should be reporting something that has been done already? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mkhondo. Can I'm just wait if there are any other hands. Can I just one comment and a question around the SEE? First, let me commend the SEE for being innovative when they see that they are not getting any, let's say, joy from the government departments, and then be able to see what is it that they can do better. And if we can, maybe at an appropriate time, if not now, just be exposed to what are these new products that they have then trying to then produce, so that they are able to generate income. And that's what I'm saying. Let's congratulate them for that. But the question then is from the department, this bailout, should I say, if I can get clarity, is it going to be, is it a once-off bailout, or is it again going to be dependent on their financial status? I will respond on that after I got that clarity. Otherwise, I thank you very much for those. We'll then allow on this session the DG and other officials to respond. But it's safe to say I don't have a problem with the questions of Mr. Honourable Bagram, but I consistently, and I'll always be consistent in raising this, that it makes things better if when we ask questions, we then become pointed in areas where we think that the department is not making any headway, rather than being general. I'll make an example. If we know that it's the Department of Labor in the Nelson Mandela municipality is not doing well on ordinary UIF, I'm saying be pointed. And the reason for that is that it also assists the department not to be fishing around and trying to understand where is it, because a general question at times creates an impression that there's nothing that is being done. So in moving forward, I would appreciate that if we can do that as when we ask our questions. Those are the questions that have been asked, honorable members. We'll then allow the DG and the officials. And if then either the minister or the DM want to come in on this, so that when we go to the next presentations, at least we are done with this. DG?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, if you may please repeat the question on the bailout. I didn't hear it. You spoke about the bailout. Unmute, Chair.
I have. I'm muted. In the presentation by Mr. Marotoba, he did reflect that they had a bailout of 25 million. So then my question is it going to be, for clarity, is it going to be a once-off, or it will depend on how they generate the status of their financial income generation programs. I hope now it's quite clear.
It's clear, Chair, thanks. Let me start with that question, Chair. And Mr. Mrotova will then add. Chair, it depends on the financial performance of the entity. We've set a target of sales that we want to achieve in this financial year. And of course, those sales are dependent on a number of assumptions. One, that there will be work that the factories will be busy with, and that government departments will support this entity. And if that happens, then our sales are going to increase. And if the sales increases, then we have no reason to ask for more money, or the entity has no reason to ask for a bailout, except in special circumstances. For instance, now we had to give money to the entity so that it can upgrade its ICT, especially the system that they are using in the factories. So I think it's an amount of about 17 million, if my memory serves me well. So there are instances like those, but generally it becomes a once-off bailout or assistance, for lack of a better word. Then the questions asked by Honorable Mkhonto. Do all the things that are in the APP have an impact on the people out there? Yes, they do, Honorable Mkhonto. Just to illustrate how the work that we do impacts on the lives of the people out there. The committee will remember that we came here to the committee to present quarter three or quarter four report. And we had a slide there where we were indicating the number of complaints that we received and the amount of money that we have recovered. I think it runs in excess of just over 2 million. And that is a result of the work that the department is doing. And that 2 million has ensured that there's food on the table of the table of the workers that were not paid what was due to them. And the work that we do again, if you look at the placement of people in employment, little as it is, we know that one person that is placed in employment is able to assist seven more people or eight more people with the little wages that person earns. So that has an impact. It might not be a huge impact, but definitely it does have an impact. The labor activation programs that we run as a department, they have an impact. Just on the, during the first hard lockdown, we had young people who were part of the labor activation program. Because of the lockdown, they could not attend classes, but we had to continue to provide them with stipends because we understand that the role played by the stipend in the lives of these young people, for them to be able to put food on the table, to commute to classes. So that definitely has an impact. So on the induction, Honorable Chairperson, I had a number of these, all of these training that we're talking about, which are under administration, are internal trainings that we offer internal staff. That includes induction. Every single employee of the department is inducted. Whenever they join the department, there is also training that we offer, a sort of a recap, so that everybody is aware of his or her responsibilities. We just now finalized the service plan, the service delivery plan of the department, which was we're required to review it. So we just finished reviewing it. Again, we will workshop our officials in terms of what is contained in the service delivery plan, the pledge that we make in making sure that we provide a better service to the consumers of our services. I didn't quite get the question on the replacement of labor brokers. Maybe Mr. Mrotoba got the question. My network this side is terrible. We will provide, of course, the physical addresses of the factories to the committee, and the committee will then distribute it to its members. We have done this exercise, I think, at some point. That information is readily available. Mr. Mrotoba will deal with the additional employment of 25 people at SCE. Chair, the question asked by Honorable Cardo, that what happened to the UIF, seven cases of senior officials that were charged. The disciplinary hearing is still continuing, Chairperson. And once it's finalized, we'll make it a point that the committee is aware of the outcome of the disciplinary process. And whatever the sanctions are that are recommended by the chairperson of the disciplinary process, they will be implemented as is always the case. I think the Inspector General will respond to the questions relating to inspection and enforcement services. What are the jobs that are being offered, are being created by Compensation Fund UIF? Part of the job creation mandate of the Compensation Fund is to make sure that they assist in providing or creating jobs in the health sector. So part of the investment that they make is towards creating jobs in the health sector. So that's their contribution. The Unemployment Insurance Fund has a responsibility to also make sure that they assist people who are beneficiaries of UIF to assist them to bring them back into the labor market. And that's why the work of the Public Employment Services career counselors is very, very important, because they must actually point out to these unemployed UIF beneficiaries what are the job opportunities that are there. And we work with service providers and other government departments in making sure that a number of these people who are still available for labor market are placed in employment. We're not always successful, but the labor activation program is attempting to assist to make sure that a number of these work seekers or UIF beneficiaries are placed in employment. So you will hear that in the presentation that was done and the reports that we always provide to the committee, the number of jobs that we place people in are one, permanent employment, and secondly, there are temporary jobs that that we place people in. So those are the kinds of jobs that are offered to people in different sectors, construction, manufacturing, and the likes. The questions asked by Honourable Graham, I think, Chair, you did indicate that it makes it very, very difficult to respond to a general statement. Honourable Graham says that the department had a pitiful and a shameful year where unemployment and the destruction of CCMA, UIF compensation fund. Now, I don't know how to respond to that, Chair, because the Unemployment Insurance Fund, for instance, did excellently. We hear talking about the disbursement of just over 60 billion to help people who were distressed workers were distressed during the COVID. And definitely, and if you listen to the analysts, the economists, when they talk about the unemployment rate that was announced by the Statistician General, there's general consensus that had UIF not made this intervention, things could have been, worse than they are. So there's general consensus that the intervention really helped, to stem the tide of unemployment, and also prevented the possible retrenchments that could have been that could have happened. So if you look at that alone, you begin to wonder, where is the destruction of the system the UIF in this regard. Of course, the funds that were used by UIF were funds that were invested precisely to deal with situations like this, and we are of the view that they were put into good use. CF as well, Compensation Fund, played a very important role in making sure that people who, workers who contributed, who contracted COVID at a workplace were compensated, working very well with the Rand Mutual Association and Federated Employer Mutual Association, FEMA and RMA. And we are of the view that if you look at the national figure and you compare that with the workplace, in rate of infections, and you think you then look at the work that was done by the Inspection and Enforcement Services, definitely sure there's the rates are very low at a workplace, and we know that what happens at a workplace permeates through to society, and vice versa. So if you have a national figure that is high, you expect that people will take the virus with to workplaces. But because of the vigilance and the interventions that we came up with, that was averted. So again I'm trying to illustrate a point that we don't think that we had a shameful and pitiful year as a department. I think we had a year where our interventions yielded positive results. And the CCMA, the destruction of the CCMA. Honorable members are going to get a presentation about the APP of the CCMA. And you will see the adjustments that the CCMA has made in order to cope with the budget cuts. And what you would notice is that in the critical areas of the work of the CCMA, you will notice that the CCMA has retained the targets that they've set previously before the cuts. They've retained those targets. Of course, there will be areas where there are slight adjustments because of the budget cuts. So this destruction of the CCMA, I don't know where it comes from, Chairperson. And I do want to make this point, though, that in as much as we want to make sure that CCMA has all the resources that it requires, it concerns me that we never complain about the overload that the CCMA is sitting with. And that overload is as a result of the failure by employers and workers to resolve their disputes at the workplace. Now, we must continue to fund the consequences of that failure. And because their budget cuts, we lament the fact that the CCMA will have difficulty to deal with the failure of the labor market failures. And strangely, business, they are also complaining about this. And yet there isn't much that they're doing proactively to deal with disputes at the workplace level. And again, you talk about the destruction of the system, and that the finger is pointed towards the department, and yet the people who are destroying the system are people who are flooding it with unnecessary cases that they could have dealt with at the festival or at the workplace level. Are there any plans to get the budget back again? We continue to engage National Treasury. And the committee will remember this, that the situation could actually have been much more dire if we had not put up the fight that we put up in making sure that our budget cut is less than what it was supposed to be. You remember we came to the committee, we said there was a figure of about 20%, which was suggested by National Treasury to cut our budget by 20%. We engaged with them, and it resulted in the budget cut of just over 7%. And we did our best to cushion CFMA, and you'll see that they're the least entity that is affected by the budget cuts. So if we look at the medium-term expenditure framework, there is nothing that suggests that we will get the money back. We will get increases to the allocation, but if you go back and look at how much our budget was compared to what it will be this year and next year and 2023, it is nowhere where it was supposed to be to have been, and therefore it gives me a sense that we will not get the money back unless the state of the economy improves and there is more money in the fiscus. SARS collects more, and therefore there's more money to share in the fiscus. Equal access to opportunities. This is a point that I spoke about, that CCMA has made adjustments, and we will be also facilitating a discussion with the CCMA that it makes use of the Department of Labor offices. In fact, in some areas where the CCMA doesn't have offices, we've provided space for the CCMA to do its work. And we want to make sure now that people in far-flung areas don't go to the CCMA. They come to the offices of the department and they get access to whatever they ordinarily would have received from CCMA in terms of lodging complaints to the CCMA. So we want to make sure that we limit disruptions to to the recipients of our services as much as we can. The fact that our budget has been cut, Honorable Chairperson, doesn't necessarily mean that we must not plan. Of course, we have to plan, and our plans must be based on the limited resources that we have and our ability to stretch those resources so that we achieve or we make maximum impact to the people that we serve. So all these targets, including labor justice, are there to make sure that even though our budgets are cut, we are able to improvise and still serve our people and achieve our objectives. And inspection enforcement services does not exist. The Inspector General will respond to this, but I do want to make this point that our inspection and enforcement services exist, and the impact of this of their work is felt by the companies that have been visited by the inspectors. Of course, they can't be everywhere, and if Honorable Bagrin is implying that because they can't be everywhere, therefore they do not exist. I don't subscribe to that because we've been to workplaces, we've done inspections, and the point I raised earlier on when I was addressing a question raised by Honorable Mkhondo on the impact of the work that we do, these inspectors have been able to make sure that the workers that were not paid national minimum wage, that has been addressed, and they were able to make sure that they conduct inspections. I made a point earlier on that the impact of the work that they did resulted in the workplace COVID infections being low compared to the national figure. And as a result, the number of claims that were submitted to compensation fund are not as many as we have expected them to be. And that's because of the work of these inspectors. And yet Honorable Bagrim says they don't exist. I think the DDG will respond to the number of people with disability and that we have made a promise of 3%. I think I responded to this question on fraud and corruption, UIF investigation. Whenever there are fraud cases, the investigations that were done, we have to wait for the outcome of those investigations so that we follow a fair process, a laid down process, and there's no point in us rushing and doing things that are against the law solely because we want to speed up the process. We have to make sure that things are done according to the book. And once the investigations are completed and there's a disciplinary process and which will be followed by a sanction that will be recommended by the presiding officer, we then implement the sanction. So with UIF, we're waiting for those investigations. And in the department, those fraud cases that have been identified, we are busy starting a process of disciplinary process. There are no consequences. Like I indicated, if the outcome says we must effect a certain sanction, there's no reason for us not to, and we don't sweep things under the carpet as suggested by Honorable Bagrim. I have never had a single case where it was swept under the carpet in my lifetime as a in the department as a director general. On the code of good practice, the Honorable Graham Chairperson would know that there are processes that we need to follow, and unfortunately, these processes, they take quite a long time. Just now, we have submitted to Parliament the Convention 190 so that convention can be ratified. And the ratification of that convention will be given effect by the Code of Good Practice, because the Code of Good Practice is aligned to that Convention 190. And this still needs to go. This still needs to go to NEDLAC, the Code of Good Practice. And again, we have sent it out for public comments, and we received public comments, and it must then go back to NEDLAC for further processing. So, with the experience of knowing how long these things take, it doesn't make sense that we will say we're going to do it tomorrow, when we know that there are other dependencies that are beyond our control as a department. Chair, those were the questions that were put to us. I think there are two questions that this IES must deal with, and there's a question that Mr. Mulotoba must deal with, and then there's one that corporate services must deal with. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Mulotoba. Thank you, DG.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Just on Honorable Mkhonto's questions, there was a question around our reach to communities. Now, the department has 126 labor centers. Of the 126 labor centers, 64 of them are fully well equipped with self-service device that people can go and get online services. And the 62 are part of the labor centers that were still busy, and the delay was because of security concerns and so on. And that is why we couldn't put those equipment. But we are also targeting the additional four to make them to be fully fledged youth centers. And we also have 470 visiting points over and above the 76 satellites and two zone centers that the Department of Employment and Labor operate from. And this is where we offer a whole range of services, especially UIF and PERS. Now, honorable members must recall that PERS has just about 530 people at national and provincial level servicing the entire country. The second question related to whether ESSA system is going to replace labor brokers. Now, the ESSA system is a system that you register people, you register opportunities, you do the matching, and in the process, you recommend candidates to employers for recruitment purposes. It's not a regulating measure. It's an IT system. The issue of the labor brokers is regulated under the Employment Services Act, and currently, the labor brokers don't exist in our legislation. We normally refer to them as private employment agencies and temporary employment agent services. And these are also regulated in terms of the Labor Relations Act. Within the department, we do register all private employment services organizations and publish their names in the website of the department, so that if people want to know that these are duly registered, they can do so. Honorable member, unfortunately, we cannot ban them. The conventions passed by the ILO requires that we work with these organizations, and that is why we regulate them, and we the Employment Services Act provides for the regulations. You are right, honorable members, that I should be reporting on the implementation of the mobile 24 mobile units. Now, the issue is that even with the youth centers, yes, the minister did make a commitment to have them by end of November. Unfortunately, due to reasons beyond our control and the COVID environment, the launching of those youth centers was delayed and the budget cuts, and we had to wait until the current financial year so that we can procure some of the units that we needed and to get those services ready. The transfer of the amount of money that we're supposed to pay for the mobile units was also delayed by National Treasury. And the DG ourselves also signed the remaining documents, and we are in the process of now finally awaiting Treasury to transfer all those funding so that the procurement of the mobile units can then happen and we can roll them out in the current financial year. There was also a question, DG, on the people with disabilities. I hope that DDG Corporate Services will talk to the issue around the employment in the department. However, over and above the supported employment enterprises, we also ran a program which was very successful, and Treasury doubled the allocation of funding to that program, which is subsidies that we offer to 10 organizations across the country that employ people with disabilities. The subsidies started initially at 850 rand and currently stands at 1,250, because those people also add in addition the social grant system, that is the social grant services, because they earn below the means test, and employers also augment their salaries from the products and services that they sell. And Honorable Chairperson, we are more than happy to showcase, if you visit some of the factories, we can show you some of those units, and masks, TV stands, chairs that can be used in the houses, especially the RDP houses are having a high intake of some of the units, because the furniture is customary made for those kind of houses, and we are beginning to receive a lot of requests for those units, and we are prepared to share. Just on the addresses, yes, DG is correct, we circulated the addresses, but we can circulate them again. And just to indicate to Honorable Mkhonto that in Durban, we have a factory that was damaged by storm, it's not operating, and Public Works will take about 2 years to repair that factory because of the extent of the damage. And currently we are looking for an alternative accommodation, and we may have to take a very difficult decision to lay off those workers, something that we don't want to do, but we are also engaging workers because the AG gave us a finding on the idle workers because of that. And Mpumalanga expansion, we had to stall that process. We didn't want to do what we did in Sishihu by using the reserves that we had. The reserves that we had were used to expand to Sishihu to buy new machinery and to also buy new trucks, one each for the factory. Now, if we have to expand to Mpumalanga, what it may mean is that we may have to go for a once-off cash injection so that we can have factories across all provinces. I'm raising this because on the list that Honorable Mkhonto is going to get, when they look at the Durban and KZN and Mpumalanga, you notice that we have that problem. Thank you, DG, and thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Morotoba. Who else is going to respond before I allow the, but I don't know whether the minister is in or the DM, if there are any. But Mr. Morotoba, you didn't tell us, please, if you can, DG, we must then be told where are these, which province, the SEE, that they are doing a some new projects, if we can be informed which areas, so that we can then be able to go and visit them when we are conducting our constituent work. Thank you very much. I see that the Inspector General.
Yes, Chair. Thanks.
Yes, Inspector General.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Chair, thank you for the opportunity. And greetings to honourable members, the Deputy Minister. I think I saw the Minister being present as well, and the DG and colleagues. So I just want to add to what the DG said with regards to an issue that was raised by Honourable Mkhonto in terms of the impact that we have. Although the work that we do, as we presented, seems to be activity-based, it does have a lot of impact. If you look at the financial year 1920, where we've done a full analysis, and for that period, for the national minimum wage, we're able to recover in excess of 105 million. This is money effectively that went into the pocket of vulnerable workers due to the fact that their employers were not compliant to the national minimum wage. And if you look into the BCA space, we're able to recover over 40 million rand for the same period. And when you add the two together, it's over 145 million that was recovered. In the BCA space, we'll recover and with regard to illegal deductions and underpayments, you do find underpayments in the space of leaves and calculations and so on. So I thought I should just add to what the DG has said. And with regard to what Honorable Bagrain has raised, I think it is almost exact words said that inspection and enforcement services has all but disappeared. On the contrary, Chair, we are actually picking up an increase in our own footprint. If you look at the current, or rather the financial year that has just been concluded, that ended in the 2020-21 financial year, our annual target was 180,000. And in the forthcoming, or the current year, our target, the annual target is 296, which is in excess of 100,000 workplaces more that are going to be inspected. So clearly our footprint is growing. And if you look at the inspections that we did in 1920, it's over 230,000 workplaces that the inspectors have gone out and inspected. And we're planning that in the next 5 years, at least we'll have visited 1 million companies. If that is not growth, then I don't know what growth is. So I think the assessment that we've all but disappeared is not a fair one. Chair, there was also a question that was asked by Honorable Cardo. I didn't quite get the question. And I do beg your indulgence, Chair, that if the Honorable Member can repeat the question so that one can be able to respond to it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Inspector Honorable Cardo. Are you... There's a humble request that you can repeat your question.
Right. So my question was about the discrepancy between quarter one and quarter four in terms of inspections to be conducted. In quarter one, the target is just under 75,000, and in quarter four, the target is just under 300,000. I wanted to know why there is such a large discrepancy between the quarters. And I asked a supplementary question about the feasibility of conducting so many inspections given budget cuts. And I know one of the ways in which you seek to address that is by conducting remote inspections, but I also wanted to know what exactly does a remote inspection entail? How do you conduct a remote inspection of a workplace? Thank you.
No, I think it's more clearer now. Inspector General, are you ready to respond?
Yes, Chair. I think with regard to the number of inspections, I was trying to go to the slide so that one can be able to explain it nicely. I'm trying to locate the slide. Maybe Matapele can also assist. But what is happening there, you see that the 296,000 is actually the annual target. And then the reporting is going to be cumulative. So if you look at the slide number is 31. If you look at the like I said, the annual target is 296,904. For quarter one, it's going to be 74,227. Then it will be cumulated. So that quarter one's target gets built into the second quarter target, which gets built into the third quarter target, and then into the annual. So the way we do it and the way we report is cumulative. So I hope that clarifies, Chairperson. With regard to the question on how are we going to conduct a remote inspection as a mitigate the concerns in an event that our resources not what we expect them to be. Chair, there are inspections in our offerings that could be conducted supplementarily remotely. If I take, for instance, employment equity as an example, what we normally do when in the employment equity space, when we visit workplaces, we normally analyze their employment equity plans.
and also the reports. We also look at their documents with regards to representation of their forums, and we look at their minutes and so on. So it is possible to source those documents without necessarily going to the workplace itself. And it is also possible to conduct meetings with interested parties and key stakeholders within those workplaces remotely. As we know, now we're living in the age of Zooms and all the virtual platforms that you can utilize. So it's possible to do that. Also, if you look into OHS as a supplementary measure, we could also, prior to going out for an inspection, we could request administrative documents, like a risk assessment as an example. And some of the risk assessments are quite bulky, depending on the nature of the workplace that inspectors will be visiting. And you find that if you ask for those type of documents prior to going for an actual inspection, it does assist you to profile the workplace such that it would also cut the amount and the number of days that ordinarily you would spend had you not done the preparatory admin work in remotely. So basically, those are some of the examples that I could use. So yes, when we talk about administrative inspections or remote inspections, that is some of the instances that you're referring to. And the slide number that I was referring to earlier, Chair, is slide 31. So the one that has been put there, not the right one. Or the slide that talks to budget allocations and output indicators and so on. That is the one that is talking about the targets that Honorable Card was referring to. I hope that answers the question, Chair. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Inspector General. Minister, so that we wrap off on this. Are you around? Okay. Is there anything that you want to?
Not much, Chairperson and honorable members. Just to make an addition on the issue of the budget cuts and this downplaying of the role of the department. And I think it's common knowledge, Chairperson, that the process to ensure that the resources are allocated to meet the country's political priorities and to improve the quality and effectiveness of spending are done within the sustainable fiscal limits. And through that particular process of budgeting, a large number of institutions or public institutions, they plan, they collaborate, they negotiate and decide together on that comprehensive plan for spending the resources. But Chairperson, the 2020-21 budget was not an easy one. And because of the pandemic, and Chairperson, all those products, I mean, that product of the budget was a product of a consultation on where we needed to focus on the crisis. We can't run away from that. And budget, as much as they are legal, but cannot be sacrosanct. They are influenced by the economic growth and performance of the economy. And there are a number of other factors which you look into. But the major factor has been the crisis, which was a global crisis, the coronavirus pandemic.
which we all know about it, which impacted us and made the country to come to a standstill. And there were processes of serious negotiations and interactions amongst the various political actors and the bureaucrats. And as I've said, it was not an easy exercise. And we know, Chairperson, that government announced and had to announce a massive social training and economic support package of 500 billion. Meant to mitigate against the blow of the COVID-19 in the country. And the coronavirus or the impact of coronavirus required an extraordinary coronavirus budget so that we direct resources towards fighting the pandemic. And this has forced government as a whole across all departments to do a reprioritization. And hence there were cuts in some areas. And the president has had to announce an economic strategy which was implemented to jumpstart the recovery of the economy of the country as the budget emerged. We talked about the economic reconstruction and recovery plan, a major program. So all I'm trying to say is that all programs were impacted negatively, and it was a very difficult issue to talk about how do we, where do we cut? But it had to happen. But we cannot when we're here and make the issue of a 5% cut on the CCNA as if as the thing, and there are no other priorities. There are programs who were cut with percentages far more than that, but were forced by the circumstances with an understanding that as the economic situation improves, there will be some adjustment. It's going to depend when are we improving. Hence, the president announced that major economic package or plan, which we think that it will help us to improve the economy. And then we'll start collecting more revenue, we'll start seeing this economic growth, and so on and so on. But that's what I wanted to say, that any cut which we have must be put in context. And we're not just going to go there alone. This thing was negotiated on two occasions. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
By the way, Chairperson, the billions which workers contributed, including the employers, on the UIF cannot be downplayed. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you very much for the questions and for the responses from the department and the minister. But I just want to remind ourselves that also we have got the responsibility of persuading the Department of Finance through the processes that are going to be outlined by Parliament. For an example, I'm just making an example, a budget vote. As parties, I think that's where we can also advance our views and put the necessary pressure. I'm just trying to remind members that it's not only the responsibility of the department and the ministry, also we have got that responsibility. We will then go into the two presentations, and then after that, we'll then break for lunch and then come back and ask questions and get responses. Did you? Do you still have a connectivity problem?
Chair, occasionally it kicks me out, but I'm still here. The next one is the UIF. Ms. Bronkhorst will do the presentation.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Over to you, Acting Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members. Thank you, and good afternoon to all of you, as well as to my minister, my deputy minister, my director general. With your indulgence, Chairperson, I would like to move directly to slide 10, because as you will see from the presentation that we have submitted, the first slides talk about the legislative mandate and it talks about the vision, mission and so forth of the UIF. And as the presentation has been provided, I would like to move to slide 10, excuse me, so that we immediately look at the strategic plan. The strategic plan for the UIF, if we move to slide 11, supports the Department of Employment and Labour to have an impact on the labour market, which is conducive to decent employment. And if we then move to slide number 12, thank you very much. The first priority that the UIF will support is that of a capable, ethical and developmental state. And our outcome there is a functional and efficient UIF. The first outcome indicator would be the improvement of our audit opinion as we have obtained it from the Auditor General. And by 2024, we hope to have a clean audit opinion. The second indicator would be the reduction of wasteful, fruitless and irregular expenditures. And the baseline is given there in the table. We want 100% elimination of wasteful and fruitless and a 75% reduction of irregular expenditure by March 2024. The third one is the improved turnaround time to pay suppliers. And we want 100% of our valid invoices to be paid within 30 calendar days by the end of March 2024. It should be a 4, not a 5. Improved resolution of reported incidents of fraud and corruption, 95% resolution of reported incidents of fraud and corruption by March 2024. Our COVID-19 interventions have to be implemented. Now, clearly this is an amendment and you will see from the targets that we have set, the targets ended by March 2021 as we were at the time when the documents were compiled of the view that COVID TASH will be terminated by now. So 90% of COVID TASH applications with valid, accurate, complete information to be paid within 5 working days by March 2021. On slide 13, we are still looking at priority number 1, capable, ethical, developmental state. And here we continue with the issues of the COVID-19 TASH ICT system that had to be implemented, as well as the identification of these cases had to be verified. The identified cases had to be verified, and we had to have an ethics structure that was fully functional. So the ethics committee has to be established and fully functional by March 2024. As an outcome under this priority, we also have the financial sustainability of the UIF, and that is clearly something that is currently high on the agenda of the media and our contributors. So firstly, the sustainable administrative expenditure to make sure that we do not spend more than 15% of our allocated monies on administrative expenditure. And we would like to have improved returns on our listed investments to be better than the benchmark by March 2025. Strengthened institutional capacity is to improve our human resource capacity. We want to have a vacancy rate of smaller than 5%. Already the fund is lying at a vacancy rate of just under 3%. So we have made some substantial strides in filling the vacancies at the fund. If we move to slide number 14, we are now moving to priority number 2, economic transformation and job creation. Here we want more decent jobs created, and our assets under management that we will set aside to fund employment creation schemes will be 10% of our assets by March 2025. If we look at the priority number 4, quite a number of these of our indicators referred to under priority 4, consolidating the social wage through reliable and quality basic services. And here it is about our integrated claims management system to support the maintenance and the integrated claims management system by March 2023, and then an inclusive and responsive social security coverage to register 4.5 million newly registered employees by March 2025, as well as employers. We have noticed now with COVID TERS that there is a substantial number of employers who are not registered with the UIF nor employees. 100% of new companies to be created with registration documents within 5 working hours, and then 98% of unemployment benefit claims to be approved or rejected within 8 working days, and this should be by March next year. The rest goes the same, goes for the in-service benefits, the maternity, illness and adoption benefits, within 5 working days by next, the same percentage within 5 working days, and then for the dependents benefits or deceased benefits as they are known, by 10 working days by March 2022. On slide 16, we look at priority 6, social cohesion and safer communities. And here we are talking about equal opportunities, inclusion and redress. And we would want here to have improved representation of the designated groups of across our occupational levels. And we would look at the 5-year target of 2.5% of people with disabilities to be in line with the Employment Equity Act's requirements by March 2024. I would like now to move to the annual performance plan of the UIF. And the first one I would like to look at is Program 1, Administration, on slide 19. You will see that the budget allocated for administration is 3.278 billion rand for this financial year. And here we are going to look at the reduction of wasteful and fruitless expenditure for this financial year must be at least 30%. A cumulative target, as you can see, it is explained over the quarters. Our irregular expenditure reduction should be 20%, as it is explained over the quarters again. I have already earlier alluded to the cost of the administrative expenditure and said we want this to be below 15%. And then our valid invoices, I also have alluded to that 100% of our invoices must be paid within 30 days in order to support our SMMEs and service providers that especially now are dependent on the money that they receive. On slide 20, the vacancy rate, I have also alluded to when I spoke about it under the SAT plan, and I have already reported that currently we're already lying at less than 3%. Persons with disabilities, we would like to have more than 2% of people in this financial year, 2% of our employees to be persons with disabilities. And then in this financial year, we would like to move towards percentages larger than 75% of Africans in our senior and middle management levels. And this includes women, to make sure that we empower the citizens of the country. Administration in terms of slide number 21, I have alluded to the claims management system. We would like to finally replace the CIA claims management system with a SAP system. And here by quarter four, we want to have the claims management system deployed to the production environment. The number of jobs created through UIF funding and investment initiatives, and these would be jobs created through the investments in the PIC, and for that will form part of the PIC's mandate from the UIF. We want to create 5,000 new jobs through our investments. In the first quarter, 500, 1,500, 3.5, and then finally to reach 5,000 by quarter number 4. We would also like to resolve 100% of our internal and external audit findings to make sure that we improve the audit outcomes of the UIF in this current financial year. Then if we move to the percentage of the fraud cases that we would like to finalize, in this financial year, we would like to finalize cases as follows. 90% to be finalized within 90 working days. And this does not mean that we're not going to finalize 100%, but some of them will take longer than 90 days, especially if they are very complicated cases. So at least 90% of the cases must be done within 90 working days. Our simplistic or simple cases must be done within 30 working days, whereas the complex cases where there's a lot of external parties involved will take not longer than 30 days. And we want to finish the COVID-19 cases within 60 working days. Then the last indicator for administration is the creation of the Ethics and Transformation Committee, and that we have the reports available. So we would like to finalize the establishment of this and appoint them by the end of quarter 2, and that they then should start working in terms of producing reports to the fund. That takes care of administration. If we can look to business operations on slide 26. So business operations is the meat of the UIF. This is where our work lies. This is where the work lies in terms of paying benefits to our beneficiaries. And for that, you'll see that there's a budget allocated of 50.561 billion rand to make sure that we do that. So the number of newly registered employers, I have already in the set down also given a number, but for this financial year, the target is 80,000. And we will reach this by the end of quarter 4. The number of newly registered employees, 860,000, which also spread over the 4 quarters. And we, will be able to achieve this based on the information that we have after the TERS, COVID TERS payments were made. Percentage of new companies that we will provide with complete and accurate verified information and give them their registration documents. 95% of these companies will receive it within 1 working day. On slide 27, here we talk about the issuing of compliance certificates, tender letters and non-compliance letters, 90% within 10 working days. And we have seen that employers are starting to use the e-declaration or the electronic portal where they can help themselves obtaining these documents. Then the percentage of complete, accurate and verified benefit payment documents, this is to pay our beneficiaries their benefit, 95% within 5 working days. Now we're coming to the payment of benefits, as I alluded to also in the strat plan. For this year, our unemployment benefits, 90% of these will be paid within 15 working days. The in-service benefits, we will pay 92% within 10 working days to the beneficiaries of the fund. And then dependents or deceased benefits, 92% will be paid within 20 working days of receipt of all the valid and accurate information. That takes care of business operations. If we now move to the project labor activation programs. Thank you. The budget for labor activation programs is just under 3 billion rand, and we would want to do the following work with that budget. We would like to enroll or have 12,210 young people in public employment programs split over the quarters, as you can see in front of you, to reach the target of 12,210. The percentage of temporary employer-employee relief schemes, and this is the TERS, it's not the COVID TERS, it's the traditional TERS that we are used to in terms of the subsidy of wages to help companies that are at the moment under distress, must be finalized within 15 working days after receiving all the outstanding documents or all the documents once we receive a competent application. Within 15 days, this must happen. Then the number of UI contributors provided with learning opportunities is 40,700, and these learning opportunities must be linked to a guaranteed job. So we will no longer train people for the sake just of training them. There must be a guaranteed job when they exit the training program to make sure that we take a bite of our share of the unemployment in the numbers decreasing. The last two indicators for labor activation programs is the number of cooperatives supported. There's an annual target of 30, and the number of SMME supported an annual target of 10. Then the very last slide is the budget allocation for the UIF. And I know the numbers are small, and if you are of the WhatsApp group I am, I think they are a bit really small. If I can ask perhaps Matapelo if you can increase it a little bit, but I'll take us through. For this year, for the UIF, we have budgeted a total amount of 56.771,534 billion rand to run the operations of the UIF, to make all the payments, etc. And that is divided as per the economic classifications, as you can see on the screen in front of you. Chairperson, thank you very much. That is the end of my presentation.
Thank you very much, Acting Commissioner of UIF. Unfortunately, honourable members are not going to see my face. I've been struck by load shedding. Now I have to change to another gadget. We will then request DG the next presentation from CCMA.
Thank you, Chair.
But before that, I would have thought that the CCMA will point us to, because there is a corrected area in the presentation that we received initially. I don't know whether she has done that, because I was a bit, I was cut. I had to rejoin the meeting, but we did receive a document that was a correction of the previous document, of the initial document.
Okay.
She's ready to respond, Chair.
Sorry, thank you, DG. Chairperson, thank you for reminding me. I did forget in my excitement to do the presentation. Yes, I have to apologize. When I prepared for the meeting, I noticed that there were some errors on the first presentation, and I had corrected that and submitted it to the Secretariat of the Portfolio Committee. So I apologize for that. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, are you still with us?
Yeah, yes, I'm still with you. I thought that